हरिः
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. So chapter 14, King Pururava, enchanted by Urvasi. Chapter 15, Parasuram, the Lord's warrior incarnation. Chapter 16, Lord Parasuram destroys the world's ruling class. Chapter 17, the dynasties of the son of Pururava. Chapter 18, King Yayati regains his youth. Chapter 19, King Yayati achieves liberation. Chapter 20, the dynasty of Puru. 21, the dynasty of Bharata. 22, the descendants of Ajamita. 23, the dynasties of the sons of Yayati. 24, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the last chapter before 10th day.
This is a dynasty.
Means this whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that's why it ended there and then went into the future with the Sun Dynasty. Okay, so now this is all the Moon Dynasty. Okay. So Parasuram was in the Moon Dynasty, or he just happened to kill it? I think he was, being the Lord, he was non-discriminating, so he killed both from the Sun and the Moon Dynasties. Right, very liberal, yes. Chapter 14, King Pururava, enchanted by Urvasi. Pratigya, unless women are trained to be chaste and faithful to their husbands, there cannot be peace or prosperity in society. Because women as a class are merciless and cunning, Tara was married to Brihaspati, and therefore as a chaste woman, she should have been impregnated by him. But instead, she preferred to be impregnated by Soma, the moon god, and therefore she was unchaste. King Pururava was greatly attached to Urvasi, yet despite his faithfulness to her, she had left him. Because women are easily seduced, the Manu Samhita enjoins that they should not be given freedom. Women are given freedom to mingle with men like equals, which they now claim to be. They cannot keep their propriety. The nature of a woman is to establish false friendship with someone and then seek new male companions, one after another, even if this means giving up the company of a sincere well-wisher. Unless elevated to spiritual consciousness, everyone is conditioned, and fallen. What to speak of women who are less intelligent than men, right? So here is that less intelligent, that means being able to tell matter from spirit. Because as we opened up in the beginning, merciless and cunning. So cunning that the four times more. So cunning is practical intelligence. Just you want to get something done, you can figure out how to accomplish it. Right? By cleverness. So actually, on cleverness, women are four times more intelligent than men. But to be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit, that's where the weakness is. Because it's about experience. It's about taste. And so if the arrangement is made that the environment is spiritual, then that taste will be spiritual, therefore one will progress nicely in that way. But if that arrangement's not made, but one's getting taste materially, then that will be followed because it's taste. So that's why it said less intelligent, because it doesn't mean in skills, because the point is cleverness is skill-based. It's not otherwise-based. So on that side, we're not talking about that, how much knowledge one has, how much memory one has, much IQ, all these, that's not the intelligent that the Vedas talk about.
Women remember everything.
Yeah, that's of course.
Don't even try.
trying that.
No, it's like that. The man can remember the anniversary, then that's good.
He remembers that it's there.
Yeah, but I'm saying, yeah, well, no, but he, they can step for it. Even if he does, like what you say, he's there. He knows that there is one. He knows that there's a general kind of ballpark. Yes. And if he remembers what it is, that's really good. But the woman will remember what someone was wearing, what was that, where they were standing, like that. Yeah, so.
Important information.
Yes. So what we're saying is we're not talking about that kind of intelligence. But because the problem is we're talking about the ability to tell the difference between matter and spirit. So because of that, then this is interpreted to mean mundane intelligence. Because the men would like to think it's that way.
And who needs to know the difference between matter and spirit in day-to-day life?
Factually, everybody should. Because then you can tell Krishna's there and that. So if one gets a taste for Krishna and doing things for Krishna, then by that taste, one will see that. But it's not generally by the technical points that will be the reason. You know what I'm saying? Technical points are nice because they point out something and they give them a taste themselves. But the thing is, men can function on that. And so then mechanically work on that. And so that keeps them out of material rasa, but it's sometimes also they get too absorbed and it keeps them out of spiritual also. I mean, you know, transcendental rasa. But it keeps them off the material platform and the spiritual. So that's why it said the husband being spiritual, he will see that way and create a spiritual environment. Then the woman, because she's religious, then she prefers the activities that are used for spirit, but unless that environment or association is there, she will use them for material. But if they're in a spiritual environment, then those same religious principles are followed in connection with spirit. Because that's the point, is that the activities are the same. Dharma and sad-dharma, the only difference is one is connected to Krishna and the other one doesn't see that connection. Or one does know but doesn't care.
And according to this, then women, they cannot help themselves with the philosophy as such.
It means they can, but the general tendency, it's not that in a, you know, when things are peaceful and nice and all, one can't see all that. It's just that when push comes to shove, then that's when the problem comes out. That's where the man helps the woman. Now, when the man gets off the rails, that's where the woman helps the man. Because if he gets overly emotional, women are very clear thinking in the emotional environment. Right? Means, you know, like we were saying, when you're talking about someone else, it's always so clear. Right? Like that. So that means when he gets emotional, then for the woman, because that is her field, then it's very easy for her to see what should be done. So very clear focus. And that's what it says, that the woman is like the fortress. You know, protecting the husband, protecting the senses of the husband. But on the other side, when it comes down to experiences and all that, and one may be attached to something, but it doesn't have that spiritual element or something, that's where then the man, then he can see the difference, because he can analyze in that way. So that's why then the natural, the spiritual husband, religious wife, then that's a strong thing. So how does he become spiritual? Through training. How does she become religious? Through training. So that was what was mentioned before. If there's training, then everybody can move forward very, very nicely. So that was the... Right? Yeah. Okay, so we have to understand this less intelligent means that. It doesn't mean what the materialists would classify as intelligent today. We're not talking about that. We're talking about something else that they don't even know exists. So that's why then, if our own ladies get jumping up and down about this, our own men, then they go, ha, see, then we're talking about a material perspective. We're not talking about a spiritual perspective. Because the spiritual perspective is what this is meant from, not from the material. Yes?
So in modern society, actually, ladies are more powerful because the whole system is women-oriented, and
yes,
men become more and more weak.
Yes.
But they lack that analytical intelligence, and nobody's training them.
Yes.
So whatever is training in the society, it's actually practical intelligence, and ladies always better.
Yeah. So that's why when we say about the modern society, it's actually based on women these days. Before it was, you know, what is it?
Patriarchal.
Probably you could say is that at the time when the song was "It's a Man's World," that was the end of it. That was being sung so that the men would still think that they're in charge, but it had already gone. Because that was post World War II, so that already it's gone. You know, because you had all these big babies who thought they were really cool and all the stuff like that, and so yeah. So the ladies let it run for a while, you know, because it was cute and stuff like that. But then after a while, they thought, this is stupid. And then, yeah. Because the whole point is that in the men's world, you're working without so much that sense of possession. It's more of just what's to be done, the technique, the effect of it, and things like that. The women's world is all about possession. So when women come into the men's world, into the public, into the workplace, then the only way they can function if there's the sense of possession. So in the environment of possession, the men are in the weaker. It's like the crocodile and the elephant. So all that's happened is you know, how you say, the crocodile's created a tsunami and rode inland. It's not that the crocodile just goes inland and walks around with the elephants. No, it brings the water with it. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing is, then, like you said, it becomes weak. Because if the men are weak, then the women have to be stronger. That's why the principle is the women are submissive. That creates the thing where it'll create that strength in the men. But it's not that being submissive is weak. Because as we saw before, a few cantos, what was that, like fifth or sixth canto? No. We're going way back where it was describing that you actually, by submission, that's how you control. It means it was brought up, it's been referred. That was referred to, but before that it was technically dealt with. But yes, it's the same thing coming up, just like with the kings, you know, if they protect the people. So that submission is how you control. So if there's no submission, then that just means there's that attitude. So then the balance, the male and female, then the masculine has to go down. Like that. But if it has that submission, then it brings the men up. But it doesn't mean that one's not in control. It's just one controls in a, how you say, subtle way. Right? How you say? The man's control is overt. The woman's control is covert. Yes.
I'm wondering why these points aren't brought up in Srila Prabhupada's books, because in preaching in the West...
No, but they are brought up.
The understanding of how... Because when we hear...
But I'm getting it from the books. Mm. It's just that... See, is... Okay, you get a bunch of... Where are you from?
New Zealand.
New Zealand. Okay, you get a bunch of men down at the pub. Okay? Now, what are they going to talk about? Sports, politics, women, you know... Whatever's going on the television, in the sports, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that. If the politics are on, then, oh, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he? It means they've worked it out. And then women, yeah, you know, you got to show them who's boss and all that kind of jazz like that. So that's how men would. So as soon as men see, oh, are less intelligent, then men will go, oh, yes. But that's not what Prabhupada's saying. Because you see all the other things, other places. In the first canto, there's one purport in all of his books, one purport, where he says women are more powerful than men. Mm. He just says it straight up front. Never mentions it again. But the point is it's there. So you have to put all these points together. So therefore, if he says less intelligent, it means what? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. It's a package.
Yeah.
But we'll just isolate it because men would like to think women are less intelligent. That makes them superior. That makes them men and all this and that. But the point is men don't have to have that kind of false environment to feel like men. Men who are not men, they do that.
It's untrained men.
Yeah, untrained men. It's just like... you know, you're kind of over the top, kind of machismo kind of thing, right? You know? Now, it's a funny thing. If girls get together and they do a drama, and then, you know, naturally there's going to be men involved in the drama. So the girls that dress up as men and act like men, it's just like, you know, that's how machismo men act. So in other words, the machismo is... how a man who's not a man tries to project that he is a man. You know, got the bigger mustache, got the bigger tat, you know, this, that, you know, the whole thing. Yeah, and so amongst the men, they go, ooh, you know, he's good. like that. But amongst the women, they go, who are these flakes? You know? And then, according to here, is that, okay, you know, I'll take that one, you get the tall one, you know, and hey, I get the short one, and like that. And then, you know. But it's not real. Because the point is women have to be women. They can't do something else. Men can either be independent from women or work with women. Women don't have that ability. That means that the man acting in such a way that it appears that he's controlled by the woman, but his house is going very peacefully, that's a man. Because only a man can do that. And the ones who are trying to always prove that they're a man and their household life is a mess, those are the ones that aren't a man. Now, what happens? Now, let's say if there's two men in a house, they could live pretty peacefully, no? Right. Two women in a house? No. So therefore, it doesn't go nicely. Why? Because there's two women in the house. Just that's the woman with a mustache thinks that she's a man. You know? And that's more annoying because they're acting as a woman and then claiming they're a man while they, you know. Yeah. So that's what we're dealing with in reality. But the problem is it's not a difficulty to understand and explain. But name me how many men on the planet want to hear this. So that's the problem. You could teach the men how to be men, but they don't want to hear it. They want to hear how women are going to be women. And so because of that, then my life will be easy. So what they want is a mommy. You know, because mommy does everything for you and all that. She doesn't get upset. She's not trippy. She's nothing. Even if she's freaking out, when she walks into the room, she puts on that good face and everything like that and does all that. You know, and the wife doesn't. Why don't they do that? You know?
They do it for their sons.
Huh?
They do it for the babies.
Yeah, they do it for the babies. I've even had some ladies say, I have two kids in the house. You know? One of them was 12 and the other one was 40. You know? And then he's saying, you know, this is the way you got to deal. You know, I put on, oh, you know, like this and that. And then she responds. He doesn't understand that, you know, she's just going along with him.
I understand that, but it's the context of outreach and when people read these statements like women are less intelligent.
So why don't we explain them instead of going, oh no, and then why don't we take this out of Prabhupada's books and all? Mm. Why don't we do something? Disciple means they do something. Mm. Rupa Goswami, he wrote Nectar Devotion, he wrote so many books, and he didn't explain the background of Radha and Krishna. Right? So, and then, what happened? The other sampradayas, all the intellectuals, the smartas, and all the other smart guys, and the other sampradayas, all the guys that are socially on the top of the pile, they all complained. And so Jiva Goswami, did he go, oh no, why don't they do that? And what about the, you know, we're dealing with all these people, what about the social things, you know, we should change it? No, he wrote a book explaining it and proving how Radharani is the topmost Lakshmi. After that, they left us alone. So therefore, that is a disciple. When we sit around and whine, and why this and that, and why not all these things, and the outreach, and all these things, and I'm such a poor guy. You know, why doesn't anybody like me? It's all that. That's not a disciple. It absolutely is not. People may not like this, but that's reality. People don't like doctors or dentists, but it's reality. Don't go to the dentist, your teeth fall out. You know? So that's the whole point. I don't see anybody trying to explain it. I see a lot of people complaining about it, talking about changing Prabhupada's books. These are not a way a disciple thinks. Absolutely not. No one can claim that, oh no, we just want to make it so people appreciate Prabhupada. Then write a purport to it and explain it so that the intellectuals can understand it.
It seems like Prabhupada's already explained it, like you said, to begin with in the first canto. I was just wondering, why didn't Prabhupada put them together?
But why is it, what are you going to do? What's there for you to do? What makes it that you're doing something for Krishna? You're just supposed to sit around and eat halava or what? My sir, what's your service to Krishna? I eat halava. You know what I'm saying? That's what Prabhupada mentions. He was saying that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he could have preached all over the world, he could have saved the whole world, but he left something for us. He said Lord Chaitanya did that. He left something for us. And then something's left for us, and then we complain? I do think from down under, that the term for that is called a wuss. No? That's the whole point. Yeah. But that's the whole point. I mean, that's what they use over in Australia. Maybe they use a little more cultured term over in New Zealand. So in other words, the point is when are we going to stop, you know, oh no, this one said that, and do something and explain it. And why, if Prabhupada has to do it all, then why does he need us? Then we could go on being a worm in stool and, you know, Hari Bol. But this is something for Prabhupada said there'll be purports to my purports. So I don't see anybody write that. I see people write other books trying to tiptoe around and, you know, hey, you know, we're okay, we're nice guys. But actually explaining it straight, how many people do it? There are devotees who do. And they're the ones that are successful and make devotees. They're the ones that tiptoe around. They're the ones that don't make devotees. Why not? Oh, because of this we can't make devotees. Because of that we can't make devotees. Oh, you know, this and the philosophy and no one will join. The point is the person complaining that about that joined when that was there in the book, and despite that. That's the whole point. It's a matter of agyata sukriti. There's not enough agyata sukriti. Doesn't matter how you write the books, they won't take it up. So you're supposed to create that agyata sukriti by bringing them in contact with Krishna consciousness. Direct Krishna consciousness. Because the more direct it is, the more they know it's direct, the quicker they advance. And if they're doing stuff that, how do you call this? You know, is devotional service, but they don't know, then it's like the ducks eating crumbs. Like that. They'll take human birth, but they won't know it's devotional service. So that's the whole point. Humans you can talk to. Explain. Learn the language. I mean, I remember back in the... When was this? 1980. I remember there was this one really wealthy... I think it was a really wealthy girl... She was a devotee. And her parents were out for some program. And they would be back at, let's say, 11:30 at night or something. But they were leaving at 6. So they had this big house and all this and that, you know, fancy neighborhood like that. And because of her social background, she had connections with all these really intellectual, high-class people. And so, you know, kind of like they pull out, you know, and then the devotees pull in, set up the program, all these people come over, there's kirtan. Ramasharmaj gave the class. And how he gave the class... Straight philosophy, but he started, you know, about, you know, the Vedas and the yogis and that and how they are understood and kind of how they're realized going through the Vedic understanding till he brought it to, you know, pure devotional service and got everyone chanting and that. Fabulous program. So he was able to do that back in the 80s. What happened? And that same kind of approach in the lectures, I've used that in many, many places. Places I don't know, people I don't know, I just used that and it worked perfectly. So this whole thing is, oh no this, oh no that. It's kind of like, when will people pay attention to actual preaching and, you know, give up on all their political correctness, which doesn't work for anybody, politicians, to get what they want. Political correctness is for politicians to apply and get done what they want to get done. That's all it's for. It's political. It's the correct way to be political. Yeah, and he becomes president anyway because people are really sick and tired of people of political correctness. So all this stuff that we're thinking, oh, now we're just getting on top of it, and, you know, and America is the head of it. They just threw it out. They just tossed it right out the door.
So we will wait for some time. And we will wait
for some time. Yeah, then we'll throw that one out. He'll be next, right? You know. You know. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that we're supposed to have that determination. We're supposed to have that focus. Then you can do so many nice things. Yeah, it's amazing. Finish the program, all the people left, cleaned up and everything, and we just drove out as they drove in. They kind of drove out and then parked, and then the parents came and drove in. And then it was that close. Yeah. You know, cleaned up, they wouldn't know anything. Right? So that's the point, is that Prabhupada spoke to everybody, from, you know, people working on the government level right down to the people that if you didn't come out with a putty knife, you couldn't get them off the street. You know, like that. So, and everybody considered him a gentleman, a saintly person, like this and that. So therefore, his method works. And when we think we're smarter, that's when things stop working. Because intelligence is Krishna. It's not that my own intelligence. I can maybe do something mundane. I can fix the carburetor or something like that. But it requires spiritual intelligence to get spiritual things done. So if Krishna gives that intelligence, then we can preach. That's what it says. Lord Chaitanya says, only if someone's empowered, they can preach. So we're saying, oh, we can't preach because of that. Then that's the wrong word. You're supposed to say, I'm not empowered because I don't have faith in this. That's why I can't preach. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. Because the point is, key goes back to what Prabhu said. He says, women run the place. Women understand it. It works. It rolls. But you have to know what women are. Because even nowadays, women don't know what women are. So the Vedas, they know what's woman, what's man. It works. So all these things, everything that we call an issue in the Vedas is not an issue. That's the thing, because you're just dealing with reality. So how is it an issue? It's an issue because I can get some sense gratification out of it. But if it's not about sense gratification, then where's the issue? That's the whole thing. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. Ah. The summary of this 14th chapter is given as follows. This chapter describes Soma and how he kidnapped the wife of Brihaspati and begot in her womb a son named Buddha. Buddha begot Pudurava, who begot 6 sons, headed by Ayu, in the womb of Urvasi. Funny thing is, Buddha doesn't like Brihaspati.
Yeah.
That, as far as planets go, they're enemies. Mm-hmm. Like that. So even though he's his father, he doesn't like the arrangements. Yeah. Lord Brahma, wife of Brihaspati. No, wait a minute. Soma and Buddha. Yeah. Buddha and Soma don't get along. Like that. Brihaspati gets along fine because
he was actually
his father.
Huh? Victim in this situation. Was he?
He was?
He was a victim in this situation.
Yes, he was the victim. Lord Brahma is born from the lotus that sprouted from the navel of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Brahma had a son named Atri, and Atri's son was Soma, the king of all drugs and stars. So that's why stars and drugs go together, right?
Yeah.
That's Hollywood, right? Okay. So they're in the moon dynasty.
Coming down in
Soma became the conqueror of the entire universe. And being inflated with pride, he kidnapped Tara, who was the wife of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. A great fight ensued between the demigods and the asuras, but Brahma rescued Brihaspati's wife from the clutches of Soma and returned her to her husband, thus stopping the fighting. In the womb of Tara, Soma begot a son named Buddha, who later begot in the womb of Ila a son named Ila, or Pururava. Urvasi was captivated by Pururava's beauty, and therefore she lived with him for some time. But when she left his company, he became almost like a madman. While traveling all over the world, he met Urvasi again at Kurukshetra, but she agreed to join with him for only one night in a year. One year later, Pururava saw Urvasi at Kurukshetra and was glad to be with her for one night, but when he thought of her leaving him again, he was overwhelmed by grief. Urvasi then advised Pururava to worship the Gandharvas. Being satisfied with Pururava, the Gandharvas gave him a woman known as Agnishtali. Pururava mistook Agnishtali for Urvasi, but while he was wandering in the forest, his misunderstanding was cleared, and he immediately gave up her company. After returning home and meditating upon Urvasi all night, he wanted to perform a Vedic ritualistic ceremony to satisfy his desire. Thereafter, he went to the same place where he had left Agnishtali, and there he saw that from the womb of a Sami tree had come an Ashwata tree. Pururava made two sticks from the tree, thus producing a fire, right? Because this combination of the two trees, where they join, that's the place where you get the wood that can make the aruni. By such a fire, one can satisfy all lusty desires. The fire was considered the sun of Pururava. In Satyayuga, there was only one social division, called Hamsa. There were no divisions of Varna, like Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. The Veda was the Omkara. The various demigods were not worshipped, for only the Supreme Personality of Godhead was the worshipable deity.
Is that because of not enough false ego? Because the things are going on, right?
Yeah, because everyone does their duty. You don't have to have, exactly. I noticed working with pujaris who've been pujaris for a long time. You know, it's not that that's all they do. And let's say at the end of, you know, just before darshan, there's a lot of things to do. So someone may have their specific duties, but basically what happens is people have to just do the needful. So because everybody knows what's to be done, then if that one thing has to be done, they do it. And if that doesn't and something else does, they'll do that. Right? So there is that aspect that anybody can do anything because they know all the duties and there's no attachment to any of it. Right?
So there's no loss of identity.
Yes, there's no loss. So then they can all do that. But then in the Treta Yuga, then you need to designate for them to do their duties nicely. You know, because otherwise, where's the social standing?
Yeah, exactly.
But because the social standing, then everybody fits and maintains their duties. But here it's that it's not about anybody. It's just getting it done. It's about the deities, so therefore you get the place organized and like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses, summary of verses. 1 to 14, Buddha born by Soma in Tara. 15 to 49, the story of Pururava. Verses 1 to 14, Buddha born by Soma in Tara. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikit, O king, thus far you have heard the description of the dynasty of the sun god. Now here, because he ended it, right? It was up to who was there. Then he mentioned 28 generations into Kali Yuga that hadn't even been born yet. And so, you know, that's it. And it ends there, right? And already mentioned, what's it?
Maru.
Maru, by yoga siddhi, he's living, you know, and he'll, up to the end of Kali Yuga, then he'll start the sun dynasty again, like that. Okay, so thus far you've heard the description of the dynasty of the sun god. Now hear the most glorious and purifying description of the dynasty of the moon god. This description mentions kings like Ayla, Pururava, of whom it is glorious to hear. Lord Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is also known as Sahasra Shirsha Purusha. From the lake of his navel sprang a lotus, on which Lord Brahma was generated. Atri, the son of Lord Brahma, was as qualified as his father. From Atri's tears of jubilation was born a son named Soma, the moon, who was full of soothing rays. Lord Brahma appointed him the director of the brahmanas, drugs, and luminaries. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 3. According to the Vedic description, Soma, the moon god, was born from the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chandrama manaso jataha. That's the Purusha Shukta. Yeah, chakshu shuryo ajayata, and then sun comes from his eyes. But here we find that Soma is born from the tears in the eyes of Atri. This appears contradictory to the Vedic information, but actually it is not. For this birth of the moon is understood to have taken place in another millennium. When tears appear in the eyes because of jubilation, the tears are soothing. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Digbhya ananda shrubhya ata evam britam mayaha. Here the word Digbhya means from tears of jubilation. Therefore the sun god is called Amritamaya, full of soothing rays. The fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 14.1.15 describes the Anasuya. The wife of the Rishi Atri bore three sons, Soma, Durvasa, and Dattatreya. Right, so, yeah, so Durvasa is right up there. That's why. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Footnote 1. Soma was a partial representation of Brahma. Dattatreya was a partial representation of Vishnu. And Durvasa was a partial representation of Shiva. Sardartha Darshini 4.1.15.
That's the Durvasa we're talking about.
Yes, this is our Durvasa. It is said that at the time of conception, Anasuya was impregnated by the tears of Atri. Because he had prayed to the Supreme, but hadn't wanted him as the son, but hasn't designated who that Supreme was. So therefore Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva came, and so therefore he got three sons, one representing each. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, after conquering the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, Soma, the moon god, performed a great sacrifice known as the Rajasuya, Yajna. Because he was very much puffed up, he forcibly kidnapped Brihaspati's wife, whose name was Tara. Right, so you see, Yudhishthira Maharaj's position, that he's performed the Rajasuya, he's conquered all directions, he has performed the Rajasuya, and he doesn't become puffed up. So that's the position. The devotee has that position. Right? Although requested again and again by Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, Soma did not return Tara. This was due to his false pride. Consequently, a fight ensued between the demigods and the demons. Because of enmity between Brihaspati and Sukra, Sukra took the side of the moon god and was joined by the demons. Okay, because otherwise, how do you get the demon? You know, what does this got to do with them? But Lord Shiva, because of affection for the son of his spiritual master, joined the side of Brihaspati and was accompanied by all the ghosts and hobgoblins. Okay, this is going to get messy. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 6. The moon god is one of the demigods, but to fight against the other demigods, he took the assistance of the demons. Sukra, being an enemy of Brihaspati, also joined the moon god to retaliate in wrath against Brihaspati. So, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's the political. You know, it's just like in the circle of influence. Your neighbor is your enemy, but the neighbor's neighbor is your friend, your ally. Because then, if the two of you join sides, he won't fight with either of you. Because if he attacks one, then the other will attack. So therefore, and so then it's the same. His that one's your enemy. So the one on the other side of you, that's his friend. So that way, then it keeps everybody in check, and no one fights. Right. So that's how they would do it before. They didn't need nuclear weapons to do that. They just, you know, had political alliances. To counteract this situation, Lord Shiva, who is affectionate towards Brihaspati, joined Brihaspati. The father of Brihaspati was Angira, from whom Lord Shiva had received knowledge. Therefore, Lord Shiva had some affection for Brihaspati and joined his side in the fight. Sridhar Swami remarks, Angirasas shakshat prapta vidyo hara iti prasidataha. Lord Shiva is well known to have received knowledge from Angira. So then, the one is that the spiritual master, that he was, you know, wanted to fight against him, so he joined. The one wanted to support the spiritual master, so then they joined that side. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, King Indra, accompanied by all kinds of demigods, joined the side of Brihaspati. Thus there was a great fight, destroying both demons and demigods, only for the sake of Tara, Brihaspati's wife. So Helen of Troy, that's nothing. That was 1,000 ships, but you know, here there's, you know, a lot more happening.
The principle is the same.
The principle is the same. So therefore it's always here. And it's a story you want to hear. It's a good fight. So therefore, you know, it's still the... We're still hearing about this today. We're still hearing about Helen of Troy. So it's the same principle.
Yes. Still like you say, his beautiful wife is
enemy. Yes. But, yeah. When Lord Brahma was fully informed by Angira about the entire incident, he severely chastised the moon god, Soma. Thus Lord Brahma delivered Tara to her husband, who could then understand that she was pregnant. Brihaspati said, "You foolish woman, your womb, which was meant for me to impregnate, has been impregnated by someone other than me. Immediately deliver your child. Immediately deliver it. Be assured that after the child is delivered, I shall not burn you to ashes. I know that although you are unchaste, you wanted a son, therefore I shall not punish you." Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 9. Tara was married to Brihaspati, and therefore as a chaste woman she should have been impregnated by him. But instead she preferred to be impregnated by Soma, the moon god, and therefore she was unchaste. Although Brihaspati accepted Tara for Brahma, when he saw that she was pregnant, he wanted her to deliver a son immediately. Tara certainly very much feared her husband, and she thought she might be punished after giving birth. Thus, Brihaspati assured her that she would not be he would not punish her, for although she was unchaste and had become pregnant illicitly, she wanted a son. Right, so, therefore, the way these rules on women, they work differently on men than on men. Men in these conditions then can come out really badly for them. But women, then, it's basically between them and the husband, and they work things out. So it's a different kind of thing because you're working on so much on the emotions here. Yeah. So that's why it's just a different method, right? How they approach it is different.
Yeah.
So because different natures, different everything. Like that. Yes.
So whatever court is described by model, it's for men.
It's for men. It's not for women. Like that. You know, if there's a need to do something within the court of men, and the woman is involved, then only women are to give, what do you call it? Witness for women. At the same time, women don't give witness for men. You know, according to Manu, you can't get the wife to testify against the husband or any relation like that. So the things that nowadays sometimes go on, that wouldn't be allowed then. So it's just they're in a different category when it comes to law. So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, it's the approach is different. Therefore, the whole system works different. But we try to understand it according to the present modern law, and so it doesn't make sense. But if you understand the Vedic law, then it makes sense.
So actually, when women try to take position in a man's scene, it's improper.
Yes, because how it'll work for them and how it work for them. They're saying there's a glass ceiling. It's how many men make it up to the top. Point is, the man tries to make it at the top. It doesn't work. He just says, you know, he wasn't qualified. Maybe there was some politics, but it's nothing else. The woman tries the same thing. She'll say there's a glass ceiling because I'm a woman. Like that. There may be instances where it is that. But the point is that it's a different approach. The women get things done. It's just like the man has to stand in the line. The woman can just walk up to the front. And basically the men won't say anything. I mean, I've even seen in Calcutta, it was arranged, British standard, is that you had the window for buying the ticket on the train, and you have this monster line. But technically, the left side of the window is for women. So therefore, you have 100 men standing in line, the woman just walks right to the front, gets her ticket. But if there's 10 women, then they get in the line on the left.
You still have it when you pay in Bamanpur for the electricity bill?
Oh, we still have it like that. Yeah, yeah. And so, but it won't go, okay, there's 100 men, there's 10 women, so then we'll do so many men, then one woman. No, it'll just go one man, one woman, like that. So it's just a different situation. how women get things done and everything like that. It's just understood it works like that. Because it's understood that the desire is the driving force. And so that has to be dealt with. And so if that desire is there, that's why he says she wanted a son. And so that's why he's leaving it. So it wasn't just she was out for some fun. You know, she wanted a son, somehow or another it wasn't arranged there. Therefore, okay, it fulfilled that desire. But now things should run nicely. So it's a very different kind of approach. Yes.
It seems that in the Bhagavatam some details are just missed, because otherwise it sounds like she was kidnapped, she didn't have much choice.
But the point is it was due to his pride he kidnapped her, and he was keeping her.
Yeah.
So that means he has to deal with her, he has to please, but she was pleased. Otherwise, why? Because otherwise she just has to say no and nothing happens. You know. That's the whole point. If there's intimate relations, only because the woman allows. The woman doesn't allow, it doesn't happen. So that's why he said, you know, you preferred. That's why it said, he didn't know, even the verse said, but it said she preferred, because it's understood by the nature of how it works. So Bhagavatam means, if we're taking it, it means in order, then one will already know Manu, one will already know Mahabharata. So one already knows these laws and how they work and the natures and how they work. So then when we come here, we already know that. We don't have to go into detail. So in the purports, Prabhupada will bring out things. Because he'll be like that one thing we mentioned before, where it mentioned, what was that thing? The nature of woman is to establish false friendship with someone, then seek a new male companions, one after another. Even if this means giving up the company of a sincere well-wisher, that's directly mono. Like that. So if one knows these things, then you understand, so it goes on. You know, just like Brahma's there. So technically you could say, other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he would be the next most senior person in the whole universe. So Brahma starts to speak. And it wouldn't mention it didn't say he was about to speak and then Bali's wife, you know, charged in and started talking. It said he was speaking and she came in. Right? So here's, you know, other than the Lord, means of conditioned souls, he's the senior most in the universe. He stops talking to let her talk because she's a woman. But it wasn't that she just came in and, you know, thought that, you know, hey, it's Thursday, I think we should order out for pizza. You know, it wasn't like that. It was that emotions, and her husband is there, and just the feelings, so just everybody knows that you let her talk. Then when she was done, and because of that, she also made it short. She just came in, said a few points, and then stopped. Right? That's also, because if you let then it stops. But if it can't speak, then you speak forever.
Yeah.
Right? But if it's allowed, then they stop. You know. And then as soon as she stopped, then it wasn't that now it's open season and everybody else. No, then it went back to Brahma. So that's the thing. There is etiquettes, and that's how it runs. So if the woman's speaking as an equal, then she waits her turn. But if she's speaking as a woman, then she gets to go first. But you can't use both. But, you know, you can't use both. Like I remember one lady complaining about how things aren't equal, and in the same sentence she gave us an example, you know, that people are losing their culture and everything, and that I went on the bus the other day and nobody would give up their seat for me to sit. And I was thinking, didn't you just say it's all equal? And, you know, hey, you know, like that. So that's the thing, is that that's the whole point. The woman will still want everything that's in the ashram side of the, what do you call it? Possession and that control. At the same time, she wants to be able to run on the men's side. So what does that leave for the men?
Nothing.
Yeah. So we're not talking 50-50 here as being, that's the propaganda. It's 100-0. It's cheating. It's cheating. But one has to know how it's cheating.
Well,
you know?
It's pleasantly cheating and it's not cheating.
Yeah, means it, but that's the thing, is if it was done like what do you call it? Mohini did it, then no one would be complaining. You know, but you know, it's basically done, generally done like a bad hair day, so then nobody likes it. You know? Yeah, so that's the thing. If the culture is understood, then things work. And so when women need to get things done, they get done. But otherwise, then there's a natural hierarchy how things work. So inside the house, it works in one side. Outside the house, it works in another. But if somehow or another the two collide, then woman gets done, and then it pulls back. You know, just like the man will, you know, then he'll pull back. So as a general rule, it's what the wife wants to be done. That's what happens. But occasionally, there may be a real need. It has to be done something in a particular way. And if it's only used when it really is necessary, the woman will let it go. But if he figures out that it's a technique or a trick, then she'll never let it go, even if it is important. So that's the thing, is one has to know enough etiquette to be able to know these lines. So the Vedic, the lines are there, so it's clear. But it's not that it's rigid. You can't adjust things under certain conditions, and then they go back to normal. Right? So in emergencies, they go outside of that. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj says, what's law in normal times may be unlawful in emergency, and vice versa.
This only works if mode of goodness is there.
Yeah, mode of goodness is there. You know the law. It's about knowledge. It's about detachment. And then for us, it's about pleasing the Supreme Lord. Then these things can go very, very nicely. Then you can make adjustments. But if it becomes a standard, then that's a problem. As soon as it's taken, no, this is standard, then that's the difficulty. So due to lack of training, then men take things that aren't normal as standard. The women take things that are not normal as standard. And then it just creates more difficulty than there already is.
State of emergency.
Yeah. It means the material world's already bad enough, even when things are going good.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. By Brihaspati's order, Tara, who was very much ashamed, immediately gave birth to the child, who was very beautiful, with a golden bodily hue. Both Brihaspati and the moon god, Soma, desired the beautiful child. Fighting again broke out between Brihaspati and the moon child, both of whom claimed, "This is my child, not yours." But according to the law, then the child belongs to Brihaspati because it's his wife. So technically, the moon god should have left it. I mean, excuse me, what's this? Yeah, the moon god should have left it.
He's a little off.
He controls everything. What do you want? he's got all the celebrities and all the drugs. So
that's,
you know, it's like,
that's the problem, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Recipe for disaster.
He's the director of Brahmanas. Also, what is that position?
Because what's the ultimate goal of something? Means puja and all the brahminical things are for what? Yeah, to get a higher goal. Does that make sense? So, the moon is Aniruddha, so it's all about the prayojana.
Mm.
You know, so the brahmanas are interested in that higher. That's why we have these things all coming now, so that we get them out of our system before a 10th canto. You know, how can he be controlling brahmins and he's doing this?
Mm.
It's do we hear of it happening again? Right? This happened once, you know, and now it's been 151 trillion years. Have we heard of it happening a second time? No. So everybody has a bad day.
You can say he was young.
Yeah, he was young.
He got cursed by whom? Not by this?
We'll see. Let us unfold. We'll find out. Did he get cursed? Did he not get cursed? Okay. All the saints and demigods present asked Tara whose child the newborn baby actually was. But because she was ashamed, she could not immediately answer. The child then became very angry and demanded his mother immediately tell the truth. You unchaste woman, he said. What is the use of your unnecessary shame? Why do you not admit your fault? Immediately tell me about your faulty behavior. Right? Because the thing is with demigods, the sons grow up immediately. Right? They're born, and I think there's a few hours that you can, you know, they're babies, and then they grow up into 16-year-old adults, and then they just carry on the duties. You know, because it's like, you know, how you say, who wants to change diapers? You know, you're in the heavenly planets, right? You know, so, you know, diapers, you know, high, you know, late nights, and all that stuff. That's why they went to the heavenly planets, is to get away from that stuff. So, therefore, it works out as they're born, they immediately grow up. So you see like that. Vyasadeva was like that. Then, you know, Ghatotkacha was like that. And, you know, it's just, that's the standard method. So now he's, you know, grown up and like that. Lord Brahma then brought Tara to a secluded place, and after pacifying her, he asked to whom the child actually belonged. She replied very slowly, "This is the son of Soma, the moon god." Then the moon god immediately took charge of the child. O Maharaj Parikit, when Lord Brahma saw that the child was deeply intelligent, he gave the child the name Buddha. The moon god, the ruler of the stars, enjoyed great jubilation because of this son. Verses 15 to 49. But these rules of Manu apply to us, not to the demigods. So. Yes?
Maharaj, we hear this ruler of different planets. They are not the primordial demigods?
So primordial is with Mahavishnu.
Okay.
Those are there. They're his eternal associates. Like that. Like when you see when Krishna and Arjuna, when they went to the went to Mahavishnu's place, then there was a palace and there was his associates, he came down the steps, you know, it wasn't that he was just this big guy there, you know, like that. Like that. So they're the eternal associates. Then you have within, their expansions are these ones within the universe. Right? Does that make sense? Verses 15 to 49. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thereafter, from Buddha, through the womb of Ila, Sudyumna, a son was born called Puru Rava, who is described in the beginning of the ninth canto, footnote 2. Sudyumna was the son of Shutadeva, Vaivasvata Manu, Sardar Tadarshini 9.1.22.
Sudyumna was a
nymph. No, Sudyumna was the one that was the king who became, went back and forth. So as when he was a woman, then he had a son.
I'm not asking about 9 months pregnancy, men, women, every month.
It's better just don't ask at all. He's that. But this is means when King Sudyumna was a woman, then he had a child with the moon god. With Buddha. And then when he was a man, then he had a son with his wife. So, you know, work that one out, right? Like that. You know, even Facebook will have trouble with that one.
It's not among the
people. No, it's not. When his beauty, personal qualities, magnanimity, behavior, wealth, and power were described by Narada in the court of Lord Indra, the celestial woman Urvasi was attracted to him. Pierced by the arrow of Cupid, she thus approached him, having been cursed by Mitra and Varuna. The celestial, there's a lot with Mitra and Varuna, they're involved in a lot of these far-out stories, right? The celestial woman Urvasi had acquired the habits of a human being. Footnote 3. Otherwise, of the upstarts, she's the top. So then, you know, she normally wouldn't be interested in, but because she's been cursed to have the habits of a human being, therefore then she's attractive. Footnote 3. Because Mitra and Varuna had become lusty on seeing her, they cursed her to enjoy like a human.
They were lusty and they cursed her.
But how they become lusty, this and that, that's another story. And that has a story. And that has, yeah. That's why it's so complex that, you know, it's like to remember all these. So if someone can remember, the ones who know all these, the storytellers, they're very, very clever that they can remember all these and who's connected to who.
There is one of these posters where they're kind of old.
Yeah. Well, the difficulty comes is that, okay, here is that you just have a few generations and then you have to remember like that. But we're talking about ones that, you know, they're living as long as Brahma is. Mm. And then they're involved in human society at this point or something else there. And so you're covering so many kalpas, so many vikalpas, you know, so many like this. And that's where it starts to become very difficult.
Women, they shouldn't be judged, but they can be cursed.
That happens.
Equal rights.
Finally. Okay. Yes, but it doesn't mean they don't, well, might not curse back, but it just depends upon the state. It means if the Brahmanis and all that, they may curse. Like you see, is that
Devayani.
Huh? Devayani cursed Kacha. Yeah, Devayani cursed Kacha. And then I think he cursed her back.
Yeah. But this lady that we just learned, that Shodasa, when he was a Rakshasa and he ate her. Husband.
Yes, she cursed, that had effect. Like that means, in other words, there's some potency there because of their brahminical status and by their sadhana and things like that, or by their chastity, like that. You had that one...
leper that the son couldn't...
Yeah, yeah, like that. And then the son couldn't even step into his chariot or, you know, like that. So there's a lot of... So either way, either by that chastity of the husband, by their austerities, or by both, like that. Okay. Therefore, upon seeing Pururava, the best of males, whose beauty resembled that of Cupid, she controlled herself and then approached him. When King Pururava saw Urvasi, his eyes became jubilant in ecstasy of joy, and the hairs on his body stood on end. With mild, pleasing words, he spoke to her as follows. Right. So do we see what happened here? Right. Means. She's interested in him. She controls herself. She approaches him. Then he does all the talking and everything like this.
Work.
Yeah. So. Yeah. King Pururava said, "O most beautiful woman, you are welcome. Please sit here and tell me what I can do for you. You may enjoy with me as long as you desire. Let us pass our life happily in a sexual relationship." Urvasi replied, "O most handsome man, who is the woman whose mind and sight would not be attracted by you? If a woman takes shelter of your chest, she cannot refuse to enjoy with you in a sexual relationship." Footnote 4. Srila Prabhupada writes in his commentary to verse 20, "When a beautiful man and a beautiful woman unite together and embrace one another, how within these three worlds can they check their sexual relationship? Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham hitu cham. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grihastas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress." Right, so grihamedis are grihastas who the consciousness is not actually up to the standard of a grihastha. But it's not that it's a different situation or different ashram. It's the consciousness that makes. Right? So when they take sense gratification to be actually, you know, the greatest platform of happiness, then that's grihamedi. Grihastha means we know the ultimate form of happiness is service to the Lord, or at least the higher principles of practicing religious life. The Kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of Brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are Dira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45. Yeah. So in other words, it's this position, then if it's tolerated, then one doesn't have any difficulty. There is no suffering. Suffering comes because of this. Because with this, then everything else expands. Because Prahlad Maharaj says when there's material desire, that's what creates misery. So this is the root, you could say, of material desire. So if this is tolerated, then that means all material misery goes away. Because nothing else will be as miserable. Yeah. Okay. My dear Puru Rava, please give protection to these two limbs who have fallen down with me. Two lambs. I was thinking two limbs. I think she's just standing there with the arms at her side. They were up, but they've fallen down. Okay, two lambs. Although I belong to the heavenly planets and you belong to Earth, I shall certainly enjoy sexual union with you. I have no objection to accepting you as my husband, for you are superior in every respect. Right, so that that'll be here. If she goes back there, it doesn't have any meaning. That's the whole thing. The heavenly planets, they work on a whole different kind of situation. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 21. As stated in Brahma Samhita 540, Yasya Prabha Prabhavato Jagarandakoti, there are various planets and various atmospheres within this universe. The atmosphere of the heavenly planets from which Urvasi descended after being cursed by Mitra and Varuna was different from the atmosphere of this earth. Indeed, the inhabitants of the heavenly planets are certainly far superior to the inhabitants of Earth. Nonetheless, Urvasi agreed to remain the consort of Puru Rava, although she belonged to a superior community. A woman who finds a man with superior qualities may accept such a man as her husband. Similarly, if a man finds a woman who is from an inferior family but who has good qualities, he can accept such a brilliant wife, as advised by Sri Chanakya Pandit. Sri Ratnam Dushkalarapi. The combination of male and female is worthwhile if the qualities of both are on an equal level. Right, so the character is of the same, but it's ideal the man is from a higher situation than the woman, because woman always wants the man to be better than her. Though she'll always be trying to prove that he's not, but she wants him to be. That's the whole fun, right? Yes.
Fun.
This side laughed.
Yeah. That's not what that was.
Yeah, so therefore, Sri Ratnam, that means a jewel, a brilliant, like that. She may be from a great background, but the good qualities are there. So even the modern, like Cinderella, you know, so it's the same kind of thing. She's from a position that's lower, but she has all wonderful qualities, better than anybody else, right? So the prince, then, he having those qualities, appreciates that, and then it all works out. You know, pumpkins and all, right? So, yes. Urvasi continued. Now, if she had been using one of those nice leather goth boots, then there wouldn't have been a problem with getting broken. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem is they might have stretched and then anybody could have put them on, but only the glass slipper then it could. So I guess it was worked out properly.
Probably.
Urvasi continued, my dear hero, only preparations made in ghee, clarified butter, will be my edibles. Confirmed. He says, yeah, I'll take that also.
No more mustard oil.
Yeah. I want my pioneer steaks fried in butter. Okay. And I shall not want to see you naked at any time, except at the time of sexual intercourse. The great-minded king Puru Rava accepted these proposals, right? He has to take care of the two lambs. She'll only eat things cooked in ghee, right? No mustard oil, right? So Puru Rava was not Bengali.
No, he was not Italian.
He was not Italian either, like that. It says ghee. So that's the thing. The heavenly planets, they don't care for oil. They only eat things in ghee.
Not vegan either.
Yeah, they're not vegans either, like that. They don't eat the lambs, like that. So, and she didn't want to see him naked in anything, except the time of sexual intercourse.
Like, he was not that beautiful, as she says.
No, but it's just a matter of, it's just, it means how you say,
time and place.
Blunt nakedness is too gross for women. Men may appreciate it, but women don't like it. So it has to be developed. So only at this time, then it will be appreciated. But while the men, they appreciate any time. You know, that's what we said, different nature. Okay. Good luck. The funniest thing is when they find something, get their head inside, yeah, and they can't get it out, or they get inside and they can't get back out. They have to get into something. Okay. The great-minded King Pururava accepted these proposals. Pururava replied, "Oh, beautiful one, your beauty is wonderful and your gestures are also wonderful." Right? So she's beautiful, but also the femininity, the refinedness of the character and nature, that's also there. So it's not just the physical beauty. It's the character, the movements, everything like that. "Indeed, you are attractive to all human society. Therefore, since you have come of your own accord from the heavenly planets, who on earth would not agree to serve a demigoddess such as you?" Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 23. Right, so we see back before from, this is Pururava, he also was Puranjana. He was very expert at flattering women. So we see he also does okay. Because, Agnidra also, like that. Yeah, so it's just, they know what to say to, that the woman will be pleased. One, is that the devotees may act in that way because that's just the how you deal. That's the proper way of dealing. But the materialist will do it because he wants some benefit. Right? So there's a difference there. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Technique is the same. Right? Like that, like you were saying. Things aren't in the book, but right here it's explained how to deal with women. But people won't catch that. They'll think, "Oh, we're devotees, we're not." No, this is the technique. It's the difference. Do you use it connected to Krishna? Do you use it connected to yourself? Do you use it, you know how you say, in a pious way, in an impious way? Does that make sense? So that's the things. It's not all in one place. This is not, how you say. Bhagavatam is the Paramahamsa literature. Yeah. It's not,
one-stop shop.
It's not, what do you call it? Philosophy for dummies.
Philosophy Digest.
You know, you get those books, yeah, like, yeah, like that. So it's not. Yes?
So by Kuta Rasa and Svargiya Rasa and Partiva Rasa, they're all the same. It's just the object is different.
Yes. The one is it's just for the senses, so it's called Partiva Rasa. If it's done in relationship, but then that's Swargiya Rasa. If it's done to please the Lord, that's Vaikuntha Rasa. But the medium is the same. But because the for one, the senses are the goal. For the other, then, that particular relationship is the goal. But the other is that it's the relationship with the Lord and His senses. So we see as those two are already included in the original one. That means the technique interaction is the same. It's just a matter of who's it for. Mm-hmm. That's just not understood. Because we're used to the Mayavad concept that sense, we throw everything out, then it's spiritual. That's basically, you can say, on most of the time, that would be what we'd have to do, because anything that we would do naturally is sinful, so we would want to throw that out. But for those who follow the Vedic culture, then what they're doing is not sinful, so they don't have to throw it out. They simply have to be God-conscious and bring it to the higher platform of consciousness. Is that?
It's very interesting that Srila Rupa Goswami, how he explains rasa, and how Bharat Muni explains mundane rasa, it's exactly the same.
In fact, Rupa Goswami will quote Bharat Muni. Lord Chaitanya will quote him.
Yeah.
Because he's the acharya on rasa, in that way.
Yeah.
But that's rasa. But on bhakti rasa, then it's Rupa Goswami.
Right.
But the point is since everything is based on scripture, then there has to be that for someone to base it on. Therefore, you have Bharat Muni, you have Sridhar Swami, you have Jayadev Goswami, you have Vidyapati. Who they are, where they're from, how it connects, no one knows. But the point is they're there, they're accepted as authority, then these things can be established. So that's the whole point, is that the Lord arranges it because everything's coming from Him, but at the same time as the fun is if it's coming from someone else. You know, that's the whole thing, is that Krishna is the source of all knowledge. You know, it's His breathing is the Veda, but then who's the one in the pastime who gives all the knowledge? Madhu Mangal. That's fun. You know? Like that. You know, and then in the Gopi circle it'd be Tungavidya. Like that. So they get, and so then with that, then the whole pastime can go on. Then they can, you know, that knowledge can be used, because that one, when he's eating, he's quoting from Bharat Muni. Bharat Muni's talking about the 8 sattvika bhavas. And Madhu Mangal postulates, no, I think there's only 6. Right? You know, when I see the prasad, you know, my hair stand on end, you know, when I taste it, I become stunned, you know, and all these things. So he just goes through 6 stages instead of 8, you know, like that. So, like that, they all have fun. So that's what's not understood. It's the mechanics are the same. But those mechanics are the Vedic mechanics, not the modern mechanics. The modern mechanics, if you know the Vedic, you can see them in the modern. But if you don't know the Vedic, you won't be able to identify them. That's the whole thing. You won't be able to identify. You know, it's like that, what do you call it? That example given where 2 candidates come in for a job interview. One has a really, you know, they're both good, but one has a really excellent resume, and the other one is a good resume. And after talking with them individually and dismissing them, then, you know, and others are there, the boss picks the one with the lesser resume. So then the others are surprised. Why wouldn't you take the other guy? And he says, because the other guy was very, you know, he had a pride in what he was. We wouldn't be able to teach him anything because he knows his stuff, but he still has to, you know, fit into the company. Well, the other one, when he was going out, then he went to the door and it was, you know, open. So he asked, do you want this open or closed? So that means he could be aware that, you know, do you normally keep your office door open? Do you normally keep it closed? Was open because we came in and it left it, you know, like this. So he was saying he's aware, he can be trained. So that means someone who knows what it takes can identify it, but others, they know that the guy sitting next to them all probably had MBAs, they couldn't be able to figure it out. So that's the thing. If you know the Vedic, you can see it in the modern, but from the modern, you can't see it in the Vedic. Like that. You know, you're really traditional in that. You'll be able to catch something, but, you know, the fullness of it may not happen. Because it's just not there, so there's no experience. But if it's explained, it will be appreciated. So that's the thing. When Prabhupada's points that he makes, you explain that to gentlemen, they'll appreciate. And, you know, and people who are, how you say, issue-driven, you can talk until you're blue in the face, and all it will do is that from one will turn into the other, turn into the other, turn, you know, because it's about issues. It's not about conclusion, about getting anything done. So, yeah. That's the other point about outreach. Outreach to people that it's worth reaching out to. Yeah. Okay.
Prabhupada said, if it's not about externals, then why are we so worried about people who are so worried about externals?
Externals, yeah. Like that. Because the point is that They don't like anything anyway. The whole point is those who will complain about what Prabhupada says, they complain about what everybody says. In fact, they complain about what each other says. They don't even like what they say. They don't even like themselves. Like they look in the mirror in the morning, they don't go, wow. You know, they just don't like anything. You know, that's the problem. So you can't please them. So why even try? But we think it's so important because they're so-called educated, so-called have positions. But these are, it's their own, they define their own education, they define their own positions. So then, what's the,
waste of time.
You know, once it was asked, the head of the Gurukul was doing a big program in Gujarat, came with all the kids, did everything like that. People were really impressed. Then somebody asked from the audience, he says, "So are you government recognized?" And he says, "No, we're God recognized." Everybody put the kids in the school. So, that's the point. You be straightforward, and those who want, they'll do this, and those who won't, you'll never get them anyway. You know, even you change everything, they won't like it. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that they'll either like it or not. But you explain it the best you can, according to their nature, using vocabulary and examples that they can relate to. You do all that, and then if they accept it, then that's good. We make the endeavor, but the result's up to Krishna. Between that Krishna and that particular soul, it's not us. So this thing is, if we change all this, then the whole change in preaching will change. That's saying that I create the preaching. But we never create preaching. Krishna in the heart instructs. And they have the Gyata Sukriti, they hear. Like even Putana, when she came and saw Krishna, she understood, here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, the controller of the universe, he can destroy everything in a moment. You know, so she heard all this. Krishna was telling her like this. But at the same time, she's a demon, so she can't really listen. So Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 23. It appears from the words of Urvasi. There's no numbers. Yeah, at 15, here, 14 they start. Yeah, okay. It appears from the words of Urvasi that the standard of living, eating, behavior, and speech are all different on the heavenly planets from the standards on this earth planet. The inhabitants of the heavenly planets do not eat such abominable things as meat and eggs. Everything they eat is prepared in clarified butter, nor do they like to see either men or women naked, especially at the time of except at the time of sexual intercourse. Right, so it's not that they stand, you know, there's no, means Nanda Nandana, there's no Venice Beach. You know, it's just, you know, people are dressed. You know. To live naked or almost naked is uncivilized. But on this planet Earth, it has now become fashionable to dress half naked, and sometimes those like hippies live completely naked. Indeed, there are many clubs and societies for this purpose. Such conduct is not allowed, however, on the heavenly planets. The inhabitants of the heavenly planets, aside from being very beautiful, both in complexion and bodily features, are well-behaved and long-living. And they eat first-class food in goodness. That could also be something to do with, you know. Probably if you open a McDonald's up there, the quality of life would go down really fast, right? Yeah. These are some of the distinctions between the inhabitants of the heavenly planets and the inhabitants of Earth, right? So they dress properly, they deal, not that, because you live with the woman then you can walk around in your gatkas or something. No, you have to dress properly. Right?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The best of human beings, Puru Rava, began freely enjoying the company of Urvasi, who engaged in sexual activities with him in many celestial places, such as Chaitarata and Nandanakana, where the demigods enjoy. Urvasi's body was as fragrant as the saffron of a lotus." Being enlivened by the fragrance, because it means it's subtle, but it's also intense. That's the... Being enlivened by the fragrance of her face and body, Puru Rava enjoyed her company for many days with great jubilation. Not seeing Urvasi in his assembly, the king of heaven, Lord Indra, said, "Without Urvasi, my assembly is no longer beautiful." Right? He still is full of apsaras, but she's in another class. That's why, otherwise, why would she be down here with Puru Rava unless she had got cursed? That is the... Considering this, he requested the Gandharvas to bring her back to his heavenly planet. Thus the Gandharvas came to Earth, and at midnight, when everything was dark, they appeared in the house of Pururava and stole the two lambs entrusted by the king to his to the king by his wife, Urvasi. Footnote 5. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 27, the dead of night refers to midnight. The Mahanisha is described in this Smriti mantra. Mahanisha dve gatike ratrer madhyama yam yoho. 12 o'clock midnight is called the dead of night. So it means the details are there, right? Just we have to notice them. Mm-hmm. Urvasi treated the two lambs like her own sons. Therefore, when they were being taken by the Gandharvas and began crying, Urvasi heard them and rebuked her husband. "Now I am being killed," she said, "under the protection of an unworthy husband, who is a coward and a eunuch, although he thinks himself a great hero. Because I depended upon him, the plunderers have deprived me of my two sons, the lambs, and therefore I am now lost. My husband lies down at night in fear, exactly like a woman, although he appears to be a man during the day." Pururava, stricken by the sharp words of Urvasi, like an elephant struck by the driver's pointed rod, became very angry. Not even dressing himself properly, he took a sword in hand and went out naked into the night to follow the Gandharvas, who had stolen the lambs. After giving up the two lambs, the Gandharvas shone brightly like lightning, thus illuminating the house of Pururava. Urvasi then saw her husband returning with the lambs in hand, but he was naked, and therefore she left. No longer seeing Urvasi on his bed, Pururava was most aggrieved. Because of his great attraction for her, he was very much disturbed. Thus lamenting, he began traveling about the earth like a madman. Okay, how are we doing? Okay, we'll stop here, then, because it starts to get
interesting.
Yeah, further. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.